I'm talking to Dr. Roger Wade. Roger is staying with us at the moment, and we're quite honoured to have him as a guest. He is a fairly leading climate scientist and policy... let's start again. I'm talking today to Dr. Roger Wade, who is staying with us at the moment. We're honoured to have Roger as a guest, and he is a leading climate scientist and has leading policy involvement in climate change science in the UK. Roger has a Master of Science in Oceanography and went to the Antarctic doing research on krill carbon monoxide in the atmosphere, and he was involved with the first measurements of chlorofluorocarbons in the atmosphere and oceans, working with Professor Jim Lovelock, the man who started off the Gaia hypothesis. He has a PhD in environmental chemistry from Reading University and was the pollution control officer for the Severn Estuary for a while. He joined the National Rivers Authority in the UK and the Environmental Agency there. He has been involved in the development of the climate change strategy for Wales. He was involved with Energy 21 as a director and is presently a trustee of the 7Y Energy Agency. It's a pleasure to have him with us today. And if I could ask you, Roger, if you would mind sharing with us, please, your views on what is important in the world of climate science, what's happening with climate scientists and energy.
Thank you, Anne, and thank you for that introduction. I first became involved with or started to know about climate change, I guess, many, many years ago, and I was involved with oceanography. And it was then just a sort of an interesting fact, really. It was the fact that carbon dioxide was increasing fairly fast. And this was almost part of the sort of work that you did and the studies that you took. But it wasn't really until about 10 years ago that I started to look at it as a very different issue. I think that people knew about it for a long time, but weren't really aware of the consequences that might accrue through the changes that we are able to make in the Earth. Many people, I think that the Earth is so big that it's almost impossible to imagine that man has an impact. And yet, even in the middle of the oceans, you get plastic bags, and on many of the trees, even in the Roman times, were cut down, so that we do have a huge impact on our own environment. But to actually think that we're changing the climate is actually a very different sort of issue for us. Climate has changed over many, many years due to different rotations of the Earth around the sun, due to volcanoes, due to different levels of sunspots. All sorts of issues do affect how the Earth has a climate. And it wasn't really until 15,000 years ago that the climate really settled down to allow people to develop agriculture. And really, if you look at the history of the human race, there's been so much in the last 15,000 years. So many people do say, oh, well, climate really change isn't really anything new. It's nothing different. It's been going on for many, many millions of years. And that's true to some extent. But what is so different about the situation today is that it's just changing the way that the Earth's reacting to these changes that we're making is so rapid, it's so fast, that all of the science that you look at doesn't have anything comparable with what is happening today. And in fact, although we have only been able to see small changes over the last 100 years in terms of temperature, at least most people would think it was small, it was only 1 degree. I think perhaps one of the most startling facts is that there's only 5 degrees difference, the Earth now, from when the ice ages were there. So very small differences in temperature can have huge impacts on how the Earth reacts and how we actually can live on the Earth. So what is going on at the moment? Why, and what have we seen that's sort of suggested changes? Well, for instance, there's huge losses of ice at the North Pole. There's huge changes to glaciers in many, many countries. And there are all sorts of indicators that the climate is changing very, very rapidly. From things like, well, the two I've mentioned, but also the sort of thawing out of the permafrost in the northern countries of Russia, and the loss of the changes of water supply in the middle of India, to sea level rise in Tuvalu and all sorts of places in Bangladesh, which are having huge impacts already on people, and which, unless we're able to actually bring our own emissions under control, could well sort of spell a lot of problems and a lot of disasters, unfortunately, in the future. So what is it that's causing climate change? Well, there are certain scientific facts that are undisputed. Part of the science of climate change is pretty clear. Parts of it are less clear, because when you start modelling, you do get different ideas. But the clear part of it is that if you get more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, then the Earth will warm up. And we have increased the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere from about 280 parts per million before the Industrial Revolution to nearly 400 now. And that, as I say, has shown an increase in temperature, a corresponding increase in temperature across the globe, averaged at about 1 degree. It varies where you are. It's more of a problem at the poles than at the equator, because the way the Earth reacts to that shows that you do get these variations in temperature. But this heating is a well-defined scientific fact. What is perhaps less well-defined is how that actually will impact on various places, because that requires scientific modelling, which is obviously less clear than the fairly obvious science of carbon dioxide heating the atmosphere. So we have what we find is that most of this heating is due to carbon dioxide. There are other gases that cause the same problem. Methane, for instance, is well over 30% of the total greenhouse gas, but carbon dioxide is the main one, and this has come primarily from burning of fossil fuels. And if you look at the burning of fossil fuels, obviously this is coal-fired power stations, transportation through oil, and heating in with gas, etc., and indeed in your own country, the electricity that's used for air conditioning, all sorts of things require fossil fuels. And it is the fossil fuel revolution, really, which has led to this carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. If we actually try and look and see what's likely to happen here, scientists now think that if we can control the increase in temperature to around 2 degrees, then the worst of the climate change impacts should be manageable. Doesn't mean to say they won't get any, but it does mean to say that we should be able to have enough about us to be able to manage those sort of impacts. And to do that, we really need to have in the atmosphere probably no more than about 450 parts per million of carbon dioxide. And since we're nearly up to 400 now, that doesn't actually give us an awful lot of scope to increase further the atmospheric concentration of carbon dioxide. So if you actually take this sort of analysis further, what we actually find is that we do need to probably cut down at least 50% of the emissions that we're now making, never mind increasing it further. And that actually is a huge challenge to both developed and developing countries. And the only sort of equitable way that has been proposed to deal with this issue really is to say that every person on the earth should have a carbon footprint which allows us them to have the same sort of energy use as everybody else. And this is a phenomenon known as contraction and convergence. And if you work that out, it comes to about 2 tons of carbon dioxide per person. At the moment, in Europe, in the UK and Western Europe, the carbon footprint is about 10 or 12 tons of carbon dioxide per person. In Australia, I'm afraid to say it's nearer 20, and in the USA, it's probably nearer 25. So there is a huge requirement. If we're to bring it down to 2 tons, in the UK, we need to cut our emissions by about 80%. In Australia, you guess you need to cut yours by about 90% if this was actually going to be realised. There is within the UK, in 2008, they actually produced a climate change bill, which had very broad support in Parliament, which did actually say that we would reduce our carbon emissions by 80% by 2050. And this also means that you have to do a step change of reducing by about 30% by 2030. So that is enshrined now in legislation in the UK. I don't know what process you have here, but I guess you need to do something not too dissimilar if all the people in the developed world are actually to try and achieve this sort of level of reduction. There are all sorts of the larger governments. I say larger governments. You have a state government. I've been working with the Welsh Assembly.
Just a sec. Roger. Who is it? Rolf. Hello, Rolf. I'm just in the middle of an interview. Can I help you? Sure. Yep. Do you know our address? Definitely. Yes, no. You come through the second laneway.
I'll just pop out the loop.
And then we're not quite opposite that. Yeah. Great. Ciao. Sorry, Roger.
Oh, that's all right. I'll just pop out and give me a little break.
I don't know how to backtrack on this, so I've just left it running. Okay. What we'll do is we'll edit out, but you've got the challenge then of trying to remember where you're up to,
yeah,
which is really tough. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, well, we were talking about the legislation that has come through in the UK for the climate change bill and the fact that we are looking at an 80% reduction by 2050. Of course, it's easy to make these laws, but perhaps a very tough call to actually follow that through. Where I've been working in Wales, it's a bit similar, I guess, to the state legislature here. They've also set themselves a 3% year-on-year target of reduction of carbon dioxide emissions and come up with a fairly detailed plan of how they hope to actually try and achieve this through the government departments. Actually, each government department has been set the task of achieving a certain emission reduction. and hopefully they will be able to manage to do that. It seems an awful lot, 80% or 90%, but if we take an example of transport, which is one of the big issues, the moment a lot of cars have fairly large emissions. Certainly, if you've got a sort of 4x4 or an SUV, you might be expecting to emit up to 300 grams of carbon dioxide per kilometre. And if you say do 40,000 kilometres a year, the mass of that means that you're actually emitting 12 tonnes of carbon dioxide a year. Whereas if you were prepared and to reduce your mileage and actually sort of did a lot more local work, say down to 10,000 kilometres, and there are many cars now, smaller cars that emit about 100 grams of carbon dioxide per kilometre, so that mass comes out of 1 tonne. So by still having the ability to move around and actually looking at the technological improvement, there are behaviour changes and technological changes which could easily achieve very, very major sort of reductions in carbon emissions. So, and the sort of thing that's really being looked at in the UK is that transportation, for instance, should move heavily towards electric cars, that generation of electricity, again, should become, and in Wales specifically, they're saying they should be able to produce as much electricity as they produce now by 2025 by using renewable energy. So if you've got renewable energy, electric cars, and we have a lot of heating problems, obviously you've got air conditioning problems, but if you could do all that again through renewable electricity, then you can reduce hugely your carbon emissions. Those are just very three simple ideas as to how that might be done. So there is a technological and behaviour change issues here, and of course one of the big problems with climate change and this type of work is that what you make people think that you're asking them to do is have a lifestyle that is perhaps lesser lifestyle than they have at the moment. And throughout history, everybody has gone to the barricades, everybody's joined trade unions to actually improve their lot. And what they consider to very often is that the more people you actually, or the more you're able to possess, the more possessions you have, this is a better lifestyle. But I think there's been a big feeling, and certainly is a big feeling amongst many people now, that a lot of the community type of benefits have been lost. We have issues of obesity, we have issues of overuse of alcohol, and we have issues of loneliness. And many of the sort of things that have come with our so-called affluence are not necessarily what is best for lifestyle. And some very interesting work has also been done on where we stand in terms of how much we're actually able to be happy with our lives. And it does seem that once you get above a certain level of income, then happiness really isn't related to income after that at all. So it's clear that it is possible to envisage a future where we're actually taking the best of the present and perhaps the best of the past, and we have a very much lower carbon emissions associated with it, so that we can pass on a good world to our kids. And that's what we're really trying to do by looking at this climate change. There's many climate change scientists. There was a wonderful program which Sir David Attenborough did on climate change, and one of the persons that was interviewed there said most climate change scientists hope they're wrong, and I'm actually would be delighted to be proved wrong. But there is a huge body of scientific fact, I think, that says that we do really need to prepare. We need to reduce our emissions. Not only that, but even at 2 degrees, there will be huge changes in the world. There'll be changes, there'll be drought, there'll still be a sea level rise, which could cause huge problems for people, say, in Bangladesh, and lots of droughts in sub-Saharan Africa, and closer to both your and my home, a lot more extreme weather conditions. So another thing that we do need to do is to prepare and adapt to the climate change that's inherent in the system that's there already. And adaptation might be simply sort of how do we actually make sure we've got enough water. I know you've had a lot of issues associated with drought in the early 2000s here, and I guess a lot of those sort of lessons that you learn from that in terms of storing your own water, in terms of looking at how you prepare for the future, should have been learnt. But we have to actually design our future not on the past record that we have, but on what we expect to happen in the future. And there's some pretty good predictions about how rainfall is likely to change, how the temperatures are likely to go up, and at what part of the year, and all this sort of thing. So we do need to make sure that we're designing the future with these sort of things in mind. And I will just finish off by saying there's one small piece of work that I have been involved in, which I think is something that really may get a lot of people interested in, and that's looking at very, very local emergency plans. You've had a lot of drought issues here. You also sort of within Queensland had hurricane issues, etc. And although we can't necessarily say that each one of these is due to climate change, we are fairly certain that these type of issues will be of a bigger importance in the future. And it really is a matter very often, although you've got good state emergency planning operations, a lot of emergencies actually involve good neighbourness and people actually helping each other at a very local level. If you get flooding, can you all go out and help each other with sandbagging, or even offer somebody a place to stay if they get flooded? This sort of thing. So it's a very, very local issue as well as a global issue, is how you react to climate change. And what we're actually doing in the UK at the moment is at a very local level, trying to build up these emergency plans, which may also include things like, you know, what would happen if the petrol got cut off? Are you still able to get to the shops? Are the elderly still able to get to medical attention, etc.? It may seem a little far-fetched, but it is you've seen emergencies in your own country to such an extent that this sort of local emergency plan is, I think, something that hopefully you may find of some interest. Just to finish off then, I think climate change, what I would say is that it is happening, and it's mostly happening because of mankind. The impacts are already with us. We can predict what might happen in the future. If we're able to cut our emissions either, then it may be that we can control the worst of it. If we can't do that, we will be into all sorts of issues about trying to manage the Earth in such ways that it's almost it's difficult to see how we could do that. So this is a moral issue as well as a scientific issue, though, because the impacts are very much to be felt, I think, by people who have had very little to do with the problem in the first place. So I hope this hasn't been just a sort of ramble through climate change, and that you've actually found that there's something in there that is of interest to you. It is a very individual issue in terms of actually changing your own behaviour and in terms of thinking about how things might happen. You might actually find it's financially beneficial to put your solar panel on the roof. Hopefully it is. That's the sort of thing that is fairly easily done. But it is also a case, I think, of keeping the politicians on their toes to make sure that they are also doing the right things as far as your country is concerned.
Thank you very much, Dr. Roger Wade. I wish we could talk longer. Roger will be talking at the local high school tonight. Transition the Grove is holding a function where he and his partner Jackie Carpenter are the guest speakers, and we hope that will also be of value to the community. Thank you very much indeed, Roger.